Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, we've got a great guest joining us here in the first, well, great couple of great guests joining us here in the show this morning. So we're going to jump right into it. Amanda Castor is the director of the Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. I've known Director Castor for several years. She served as part of our Montana Congressional Delegation staff for quite some time. Then she held senior positions within the Department of Interior under the Trump administration and did some great things there. And anyway, Director Castor, great to have you on Montana Talks this morning. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Aaron. I appreciate it.
Three main topics that I wanted to cover, and then later, after a couple of breaks here, we'll sneak in some phone calls as well if people want to jump in on the conversation. Oil and gas lease sales. One of the things that stands out to me here is the contrast. Montana making things happen. Montana doing better economically. Montana doing better managing our lands. And then you've got the federal government, and it's quite the opposite. Oil and gas lease sales. The Biden administration on day one started to basically, started to put a halt to drilling on federal lands. Much different picture under the administration of Governor Gianforte here in Montana. You're moving forward with oil and gas lease sales.
We are, Aaron, and that's because we have an important responsibility to manage state trust lands for the benefit of the beneficiaries. So in a lot of the case, that means K-12 education. It's really amazing that we have that responsibility to develop our resources, and that benefits our kids. And one of those places that that's done, it's done in a whole variety of ways, but oil and gas is one of those places. And we recently, last month, celebrated a really historic sale. We had netted $2.85 million in revenue, which set a record for the largest revenue generated from a single sale since 2012. Truly amazing stuff that we get to be able to manage these lands and generate revenue for our kids.
What is the energy potential on Montana's trust lands, would you say?
So that's an interesting question. I think it really depends on where you are in the state. And what I would say, though, is that there are areas with potential, and we want to be able to work with folks to be able to tap into that potential.
So, yeah, now here's $2+ million that is able to benefit our Montana schools without, raising taxes on Montanans in order to do so. And it gets more energy into the pipes as well at the same time. The other big topic I wanted to cover with you here this morning is wildfires, wildfire suppression, fuel reduction. And again, what a contrast, especially when you look at a state like Montana compared to, say, a state like California, where we've got a governor that has put a focus on immediate suppression of wildfires. So anyway, we'll start there right after this break here with DNRC Director Amanda Castor.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Recently, I had a conversation with Evelyn Pyburn with the Big Sky Business Journal, and we were talking about homeowners insurance. And here in Montana, we're doing better economically than the rest of the country, but we're still being, slapped in the face with those national economic headwinds, kind of like a February in Montana, right? So we're seeing inflation because of what's going on in Washington, D.C. and nationally. Similarly, homeowners insurance costs are up. And what I found the most fascinating was basically, even though Montana does a better job managing our land and more aggressively fighting fires in Montana, we're stuck paying California premiums for homeowners insurance because California doesn't manage their land that well, doesn't fight their fires as aggressively as we do. And I know Jim Brown, who is running for state auditor, has talked about tackling that issue. But nonetheless, Amanda Castor, the director of the DNRC, talk about just this aggressive approach to fighting wildfires and how that truly has paid off, especially in hot, dry summers like this one that we just saw.
Absolutely, Aaron. And I think before we get to that, one thing I want to kind of remind folks as they're listening today is that we're still in fire season.
That's right.
And yes, it's October. Normally, we might see conditions be a little different. That's not the case. And so just a reminder to remain really vigilant and be thoughtful, especially this time of year, because we're still seeing hot temps and really the wind, especially these past few days, has been very vigorous and helped push fires. But, you know, to your question, Aaron, DNRC does aggressive initial attacks, and we do that safely because we really believe that's how you actually are able to meaningfully contain fires. And if you let these kind of burn, there's a few things that come into play there, but one of which is if you don't put it out right away, it stays on the landscape, and then there's an opportunity for it to become an extended incident. We also think it's in the best interest in light of the fuel types we're seeing, the drought we're experiencing. We have to go out and put those fires out as quickly and as safely as we can. And our success record speaks for itself. Last year, we were able to reach, I think our percentage was 96% of fires under our jurisdiction were kept at 10 acres or less. And I think that just goes to show that aggressive and safe initial attack matters, and that achieves the results on the ground.
I know one thing the governor highlighted after his first year in office, if I recall right, he talked about how the state of Montana, we doubled the number of lands being treated for fuel reduction efforts and then kept continuing to move aggressively down that path. Is not only aggressively conducting an initial attack on these fires, but let's treat these lands for fuel reduction efforts. And oftentimes at the federal level, those efforts get stymied by left-wing federal judges and environmental groups filing lawsuits, but the state's been moving forward nonetheless.
That's right, Aaron. And, you know, this has been a top priority for the governor and I, because the reality is we're facing a forest health crisis. The DNRC back in December of 2020 released its forest action plan, and that identified over 9 million high-risk acres across the state. We need to be doing more. And under Governor Gianforte and under DNRC, we've been really taking that mission and that goal to heart. And so, Aaron, to your point, governor's first year in office, we're about able to double the acres under management by the state. And we continue to set goals in this space of treating more and more acres. Because the reality is, if we're really going to reduce how catastrophic these wildfires are, we need to be actively managing our forests. And we have some really cool projects going on right now. A good example is we're doing a forest management project in the Basin Creek watershed area near Butte to help protect Butte's water supply. So we're doing that work through canned and mechanical thinning to help reduce those fuel loads that have been caused by a massive mountain beetle outbreak. And, I mean, you drive from Helena to Butte, you can see that landscape is really decimated by beetle kill. And that's just one example of many of these on-the-ground projects that are getting at that bigger forest health problem. And it's not just state land, it's not just federal land, it's working with private landowners as well in that kind of that all-hands, all-lands approach to really get at this forest health crisis.
Yeah, you mentioned the pine beetle killed trees, especially between Butte and Helena, that, yeah, you can see right from the interstate. You don't even need to take a hike to see that. I remember, you know, nearly a century ago, I forget who I was interviewing at the time, if it was, somebody from the state or maybe it was a Heritage Foundation expert like Katie Brown from Montana or something like that. But they said, yeah, we had a pine beetle outbreak near Libby, a century or so ago. And they said, so what they did is they just cut down all the trees around the pine beetle outbreak, and that's how they stopped the pine beetle outbreak. It's like, a little common sense. But now we just sit back and blame climate change and let the pine beetle infestation, at least at the federal level, just continue to spread.
And I think what the opportunity that the state has here is that we see the problem. We have some amazing opportunities, and with the support and the direction of the governor, we're taking that and putting it into action and achieving results. And I think we're really excited to be able to take on more of this work, working with our partners, working with stakeholders, to really get at how do we have these projects in these really key areas to reduce that catastrophic wildfire risk.
One of the things that I thought was interesting, it came up in the U.S. Senate debate between Liberal Senator John Tester and Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy, was, you know, basically state management of these lands. And to me, what that debate interaction highlighted is really a success story here in Montana, which are these good neighbor authority agreements. In terms of treating our federal lands. We'll talk about that, plus cloud seeding in the Big Hole next. Did you?
Taking your calls live. 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we got Amanda Castor, the director of the DNRC, joining us here for about another 10 minutes or so. So if you want to jump in on the conversation, if you got a quick question or comment, give us a call, 406-294-0970, or you can send us a message on the Montana Talks app as well. Let's go to Tom in Pompey's Pillar, first up on the phone lines. Tom, thanks for your call. Did you have a quick question or comment?
Yeah, just a quick comment. They're exactly is the identification of what states can do versus what states can do and are doing, like here in Montana, versus what the feds are not doing. And you're talking about beetle problems, and that's going to be a huge undertaking because we don't have any mills left. So, especially east of the divide, except for Deer Lodge and Livingston. So that's a huge undertaking, but especially when it concerns having to deal with all the environmental lawsuits that happen on these salvage sales on the feds. But it's got to be done. The American people just have no clue the value of timber dollars. But I really enjoyed listening to what she's saying because the DNRC does do a good job in this state. So that was my comment.
Hey, that's great. Tom, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Yeah, on that front, Director Castor, you know, I mentioned good neighbor authority agreements. And, you know, listening to this recent Senate debate, Tester was trying to criticize Tim Sheehy because Tim Sheehy has talked about more state management of these lands, not selling the public lands, not transferring federal land out of federal land, et cetera, but having more of a state management role. And that's what we are already seeing with these good neighbor authority agreements. I understand I was reading a press release out of the governor's office that the state legislature, when they passed House Bill 883, that has been really helpful to your efforts and to the DNRC's efforts, especially when it comes to these good neighbor authority agreements.
It has, Aaron, and, you know, I kind of want to just for the listeners today just explain what the Good Neighbor Authority is for those who may not be familiar. So that was an authority established by Congress that allows for the federal land management agencies like Forest Service or the Bureau of Land Management to collaborate with states to address forest health and wildfire risk on federal lands. And so those timber harvests that are done under the Good Neighbor Authority, those help to stimulate the economy through saw log sales, and revenues that are reinvested into future projects. That's really important because that allows us to be partnering with the federal agencies to do a lot of this really, really essential work that, again, really gets at, you know, this forest health crisis. So DNRC has been very invested in Good Neighbor Authority. And to your point, Aaron, with the passage of House Bill 883 this past legislative session, you know, thanks to the legislature and the taxpayers and the governor, we have been able to take that revenue that's specific for mitigation work and really help to ramp up some of these things, including being really invested in GNA. We're trying to help increase our sales volume and harvest volume in GNA. We're also doing some additional work in GNA to really just, you know, if you look at the landscape of Montana, most of the lands that are facing this type of forest health crisis are federal. And who better than the state, who, you know, I really see us as a leader in this space, partnering with these federal agencies to get work done for Montanans.
Yeah, that's right, which is exactly what these GNAs, as we call it, are doing. Let's sneak in another quick phone call here, and then I got to talk about cloud seeding in the Big Hole, because this one is the most interesting, if you ask me. Fred in the Flathead, did you have a quick question or comment?
Yeah, hey, just wanted to weigh in on, you were mentioning the initial attack in California. I've got a career directly involved with that at, you know, lots of different levels, and even the operations section chief level, and currently working on a fire contract in California doing some aviation. I can assure you that there's an extremely aggressive attack in California with lots of aircraft, lots of dozers, lots of crews.
And parts of it, right?
It's an important distinction, and you just made the distinction, and this is probably a parallel to what the guest is saying from DNRC, is that an important distinction is DNRC and CAL FIRE and local governments protect private land, which usually has better access, and it's full suppression mode all the time. Where our federal agencies, there's a lot to criticize there, but, you know, it is harder to fight fire on federal land. And for some of the reasons you're describing, fuels, treatment, and things, but a lot of times it's access and those types of things. So it's not really a one-for-one.
Federal bureaucracy, yeah.
It can be that. It can also be different management action plans for certain parts of the forest. And I'm not trying to defend them, nor...
California is getting better at it. I mean, because they've had so many problems with it, but they even at the state level, they are getting better about it. Probably not as aggressive and as we are here in Montana, but they are getting better about it. Director Castor, first off, if you want to weigh in on that conversation, feel free, but I got to get your take. So cloud seeding in the Big Hole, I saw that the DNRC is now looking at cloud seeding in the southwestern Montana in the Big Hole Valley to deal with drought, where basically they would create rain, create moisture by conducting cloud seeding.
That's right, Aaron. So in this past legislative session, so the 2023 session, the legislature passed a law that it asked DNRC to conduct a feasibility study around this potential for cloud seeding. And, you know, cloud seeding is a process, like you noted, where you try to encourage precipitation to help increase snowpack. And what's really interesting is I've become more familiar with this. Cloud seeding technology has existed for more than 60 years, and it's used in many Western states. In fact, Montana is currently, was one of the only states in the Rocky Mountains that without an active program or a pilot study. So this study is looking at the feasibility of cloud seeding in the Big Hole watershed. And preliminary analysis is showing that it may be feasible, but the analysis has not been completed yet. But there is a public meeting in the Big Hole, and then there'll be continued conversations with the public around what's going on with this study.
Interesting. So the legislature said, hey, all these other states around us are taking advantage of cloud seeding. Montana should look at doing the same. I remember hearing about this topic. I was at a data center event in Billings, and there was a company out of North Dakota there that specializes in things like this. And they said, yeah, South Korea, when they were getting ready to host the Winter Olympics, they reached out to us because they wanted us to help create snow for the Winter Olympics. So obviously, yeah, cloud seeding is something that is done. How widespread is it, and how does it actually work? How would it work if it was something that we move forward on?
Then that's a really good question, too, Aaron. I think there's a lot that remains to be seen just in terms of this study being done. There will be a preliminary report that'll be coming out likely this month. But I think what's really important around this opportunity to take a look at the technology is this could be a tool in the toolbox to help improve the resiliency that we have in the event of water shortages. You know, cloud seeding, it can't prevent a drought. It can't create new water supply. But it's a really interesting form of technology. And you mentioned kind of how does it work. So it was my understanding that for wintertime cloud seeding, it's a technique that introduces tiny particles into certain types of sub-freezing clouds that helps to enhance the formation of snow. We think in light of the legislature's direction, we want to take a look and see what's possible here. What opportunities, what additional tools can be created to help us be more resilient as a state?
Now, I know it, just by mentioning cloud seeding alone, because I've had these conversations with listeners various times over the years. There's some people who think that all those airplanes, when you see the trails behind the airplanes, they're dumping chemicals on us. They're chemtrails. So they think the contrails are chemtrails. They think this is some massive chemical spraying operation. Cloud seeding is separate from that whole debate.
So, I certainly believe it is, and I mentioned we had a public meeting. We want those opportunities with, the public to understand this is what the feasibility study is looking at. Here are all of the things that they bring to the table. They have a lot of FAQs that help to explain cloud seeding, and I'm not the scientific expert here, so I'm not able to speak to all the details, but they're able to really help connect some dots around some of the safety and environmental concerns that you had identified. And that's why we wanted these opportunities to have these public meetings and share with folks what's going along the way. I think that's really essential here.
Yeah. Well, and Gal, as this moves forward, one of these days it'd be great to get one of those experts on the show. We could, especially when we have a little more time, take more callers, answer more questions, because, I know there are a few folks that are very interested in that topic. Let me sneak in one more quick caller before we get to the break here. Donna in Park City, did you have a quick question or comment?
I do. I would like to know how the public can find out what kind of chemicals would be used to alter or modify weather via cloud seeding.
Great question. All right. Back to Director Castor. Hopefully you were able to hear that on hold there.
I caught, I think, most of it. Can you repeat
that? What kind of chemicals are there specific chemicals or what is used in cloud seeding? And how can the public find out? Was that covered at this public meeting, for example?
Yes, it was, Aaron. So it's covered at the public meeting, and I can try to find a place. I think, we're providing updates on our website. I'd be happy to get a resource that helps the, folks get more information here.
Yeah, that's a great question. Since we're short on time here, if you or your staff wants to send me a link to that website with more resources and information, and I'll get that out to our listeners here across the state. All right, I've got to free up some phone lines. We've got to take a quick break here, and then we've got Chuck Deneau talking CI-126 after this. DNRC Director Amanda Castor, thank you so much for your time this morning. Great to have you on.
Thanks so much, Aaron.
All right, appreciate it. Okay, I got to free up some phone lines here so that we can get our next guest in on the program. CI-126. Millions of out-of-state money is pouring in to mess with our elections. Chuck Deneau is going to tell you about CI-126 right after this.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
Cattle producers are slamming the Biden-Harris administration for holding a pep rally yesterday as producers across the nation face hurricane and fire damages. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association says that real cattle producers are facing catastrophic natural disasters, and instead of addressing the immediate problems hurting farmers and ranchers, the Biden-Harris administration hosted a pep rally to prop up their failing Bidenomics agenda at the White House with animal rights activists front and center, the group said. Ethan Lane with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association said the event was attended by animal rights activists and environmentalists, as well as a call for more government regulations when it comes to cattle markets.
These are all issues that have been done sort of behind closed doors, and the event was populated mostly by groups like Farm Action, animal rights focus groups, very little representation from real cattle producers there. And that kind of speaks to the campaign nature of this event. This is not a serious policy event. A few weeks before a pretty contentious national election and some pretty contentious Senate seats up for grabs, trying to protect some folks like Senator Tester in Montana that are highly vulnerable in this environment.
NCBA said the White House should be focused on much needed disaster relief and why the Biden administration continues to import beef from South America. I'm Lane Nordlund.
For adults, 21, plus only if you try to reach your children.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh, now that'll be a fun show. I tell you what, if we can get an expert on it, we'll be able to get one. If we get like the state's expert on cloud seeding and some of these other technologies to join us on the show, that'll be a fun hour of the show, taking phone calls and much more for the full hour. That's the kind of stuff where it's like, man, you know, the election coverage, it's important. It's fun. It's exciting. But, man, I can't wait to get these elections over with, and then we can start doing deep dives on some of these other issues out there. And so, anyway, yeah, it's like, hey, November 6th, we'll still be here. No matter what happens on November 5th, we're going to be here talking about all the issues under the sun, cloud seeding and more. Let's see. Real quickly here, this is a topic we're going to have to cover tomorrow on this show. The hearing is underway right now. The Soviet-style political show trial. Montana's Attorney General Austin Knutson is doing an incredible job. Over 51 lawsuits filed against the Biden administration and their federal overreach. He's got, a double-digit lead on his Democrat opponent in the Attorney General race. But look at what the liberal mob on the Montana Supreme Court is doing right now. Jake Eaton, a conservative political consultant, just sent us a note. He says this: today is the first day of Attorney General Knutson's political show trial in front of the Commission on Practice, marking the first time in Montana history for such an event. Knutson's political opponents will hold a public hearing on 41 counts of alleged professional misconduct resulting from Knutson's representation of the Montana legislature while in a constitutional dispute with the Supreme Court. Jake Eaton adds this: despite these attempts to tarnish his reputation, public polls show Knutson dominating his Democrat opponent with a double-digit lead. Yeah, this is so outrageous what the liberal mob on the Montana Supreme Court is doing, just like the Soviet-style show trials and the political persecution against Donald J. Trump at the national level. They have had this kangaroo court commission interfering in our elections here in Montana with their own Soviet-style show trials underway right now as we speak. We're going to definitely have to talk more about that story tomorrow on the show. But CI 126, it is on your ballot heading into the November elections. And as I understand it, those ballots get absentee ballots get shipped out this Friday. Chuck Deneau is a conservative political consultant, a great guy, grew up in Sydney, Montana, on the family cattle ranch out there. Chuck, you were one of the authors of the response in opposition to CI 126. Great to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Aaron.
Well, I'm glad you're joining us because I know our listeners are just being inundated with millions of dollars in ad spending, all coming from out of state, by and large. I think, 80-90% of the money supporting CI 126 to mess with our elections, it's all coming from these left-wing, out-of-state mega donors, as I understand it.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable the amount of spending we've seen on this initiative. And I'd say it's probably closer to 99% has come from just a handful of these left-wing groups. And I think Montana voters need to realize that this is an experiment that they're trying to run on us. They're trying to implement an entirely new system of elections. It's been tried in very few places, and they want to change how Montanans elect our officials. So I think people need to be aware of that before they vote on this initiative.
It effectively would basically do away with our primary elections in all reality, right?
It would. And really what they want to do is impose a voting system that's called ranked choice voting. And most people aren't familiar with this, but it's an entirely new way of voting where you don't just vote for one candidate. You vote for multiple candidates, and you it uses a complicated computer algorithm to determine a winner. It's really not a good way to be doing elections. The proponents are hiding the ball that this is what they ultimately want with this initiative. They're trying to hide it and clothe it in this this idea that it's about promoting more competition in our elections, but it's really about a fundamental change in how we conduct elections in this state, and it's really just a radical social experiment.
Well, and you know, one of their biggest arguments, the idea that they're trying to trot out there is, well, if we do away with the primary election and allow, you know, these top several candidates to move forward to the general election, it will allow for more competitive general elections. Well, first off, we have some general elections that are very competitive right now. And frankly, if they're not competitive general elections in November, then they're very competitive primary elections, much like what we saw in the Eastern Montana Republican congressional primary, where you had, what, 8, 9, at one point, 11 candidates running for that. But, and so we already have that competition already built in. I think they just want to confuse the process because they don't, these out-of-state left-wing mega donors don't like the direction that Montanans are going. You know, it's, we're becoming more of a reliably red state. And so they want to mess with our elections so that they can erode the voice of Montanans and hope that they can sneak somebody across the finish line.
That's exactly right. The problem, if you can call it a problem, that they want to fix is that they don't like the results of our elections. It's not really about the process. There's no problem with the election process we have in the state. They don't like the results that we're getting. They don't like what the voters are doing here, who they're electing. So they want to change that. So think about that when you go to vote for this. Is if you're happy with the way our elections are turning out, don't vote for CI-126. Let's keep the process the same.
No.
And I just want to point out one other thing. So we go from, in the general election, having two opponents effectively in a general election to four. So think about what that does to the amount of spending in elections. It doubles it. And so if you're fed up with all the mailers that you get in your mailbox, this initiative would double them. It would double the number of TV ads that you see on TV. I mean, it would just really create a lot more noise in our elections, a lot more spending. I don't think that's what anybody wants.
Well, the TV stations will love that because that's why they've had such biased coverage in support of Liberal Senator John Tester, because then they get tens of millions of more dollars from these out-of-state special interest groups and Chuck Schumer. And so, hey, who cares if the state suffers? They're making their money is kind of the approach they've taken. CI-127 is a related measure. I think it's interesting that they kept CI-127 separate from 126. With 126, they're effectively trying to get a ranked choice style system forced in, but they kept 127 separate. To me, that's curious.
And I think that's probably because we have a single subject rule in our Constitution for ballot initiatives, so they would consider those two separate issues. So I think from a legal standpoint, they had to run these separately. I think they would have preferred to keep it all under one umbrella, but legally they had to do it separately. But they can't do one without the other. They need them both to pass to get the ranked choice voting that they want here. So that's why they're dumping so much out-of-state money into these.
Yeah, in general, the concept of CI-127, where, hey, we should have a majority vote winner. You know, there's been times when John Tester did not get a majority vote of the people, but yet still got elected senator. I would like it to be a majority vote where you have a runoff between the top two candidates instead of a libertarian taking this slice, et cetera. Let's have a runoff, and somebody should be forced to get a majority vote of the people. But CI-127 is written very deceptively to where I don't think we'd even know what we'd actually get out of that if that got passed.
Well, and if you pair it with CI-126, that leaves the only option being ranked choice voting, and so that's where they're heading with this. These groups that are funding this CI-126, they've funded similar efforts in other states to pass ranked choice voting.
And states like Alaska are now trying to put the horse back in the barn. They're like, wait a minute, what did we do? Chuck Deneau, hold that thought. More to follow right after this.
Did you get a call or message that mentioned Social Security that made you feel threatened or scared? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, press you for personal information, or demand instant payment. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Don't fall for it. Hang up, ignore them. Report this criminal activity to oig.ssa.gov.
Reduced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
If you love them enough to turn off your music and pretend like their music is your music.
Ah, this is mommy's jam.
Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're in the right car seat.
Let's play again.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, I checked in with Chuck DeNoe during the break. I said, well, Chuck, where should we go next? First off, hey, if you want to jump in on the conversation, if you've got a quick question or comment on this CI-126 conversation, give us a call right now, and we'll try to sneak you on before we run out of time this hour of the show. But great to have Chuck DeNoe on the program with us. He, along with State Senator Greg Hertz out of Polson and State Senator Shelley Vance out of the Gallatin Valley, they authored the response in opposition to CI-126. Chuck, I talked about, you know, other states are now trying to put the horse back in the barn. Alaska is a perfect example of just how much this rank choice voting stinks.
Yeah, and that's, probably the most recent state to have adopted ranked choice voting. And it wasn't the people of Alaska that wanted it. It was these outside groups. And again, there was no problem with Alaska's elections. They had elections similar to how we run ours. But these groups didn't like the results. So that was the problem that they were trying to address. They wanted to change who Alaska elected. And so they, just like here, they dumped a bunch of money into an initiative process to convince enough voters to support this. And it's been so unpopular in Alaska that they're going to repeal it this year and go back to the way they ran elections before. So I just really caution voters, don't let them run this type of social experiment in Montana. It may sound nice with all the advertisements and the messaging that they're putting out there, but the devil's in the details, and we're really going to regret it if we pass the CI-126.
I had to joke with you during the break. It's like, where's Evan Barrett? I got to see Evan Barrett, nice guy. He worked, he was a senior official in Democrat Governor Brian Schweitzer's administration. I ran into him at Metals in Butte. And but I remember seeing Evan Barrett on Twitter a bunch at the start of the last legislative session saying, don't mess with our Montana Constitution. And yet here are, you know, three initiatives, 126, 127 and 128, that would mess with our elections and mess with our Constitution.
Well, I think it just goes to show who benefits from CI-126, it's certainly Democrats. I think we would see more Democrats elected at the statewide and legislative levels than we would otherwise. And that's really what this is about, is changing who Montanans elect. By bringing more candidates into the general election, confusing things, making it more difficult on voters, and they're hoping that some of their candidates will slip through that process.
Hey, real quick, I'm noticing our Montana Talks app messages here. I got a few of them about cloud seeding following our conversation with DNRC Director Amanda Castor. I'll try to share those messages tomorrow since we're short on time today, and we're talking with Chuck here about CI-126. Dan and Helena also messaged us. The Montana Farm Bureau is hosting a Supreme Court candidate forum tonight at the Billings Hotel and Convention Center. If you're in Billings, you can go watch it in person, or the Montana Farm Bureau on their YouTube channel is going to be streaming that live as well. Dan, thanks for the heads up on that. I wasn't aware of the live stream, so that'll be great. All the Supreme Court candidates will be at that. Chuck Deneau, one other thing I've noticed about CI 126 is, okay, millions of dollars coming in from out of state, and it's these left-wing mega donors, but they'll put a couple of the moderate Republicans as the face of their initiative here. And I think some of these moderate Republicans think, well, I have no chance of winning a primary, so yeah, let's just do away with the primary election, and maybe I could win it at the general election. But Chuck, you know as well as I do, what would end up happening, you'd get three or four Republicans, the more conservative one, the more moderate one, two or three others, and they would so split up the vote that, yeah, you could have some far-left extremist go in and win an election potentially.
That's exactly it. That's part of the plan here is to make it easier for those types of candidates who would never win an election in our current environment, give them an opportunity to steal an election. That's what this is about.
It's kind of like some of these it's kind of like that volleyball team. What is it, San Jose State, that couldn't win volleyball tournaments before. Now they put a man on the women's volleyball team, and all of a sudden they start winning volleyball games all of a sudden. You know, if you don't like the outcome of the game, change the rules. That's what CI 126 is trying to do.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it.
All right, Chuck Deneau, great to chat with you as always. Anything else that we didn't cover? There's so much to cover this election cycle that we're kind of packing a lot in here in the next 3 weeks or so.
Yeah, you know, ballots are coming out here soon. You know, people, I really encourage them to read the voter guide that the Secretary of State puts out. There's a lot of good information in there on these initiatives. And ultimately, vote no on CI 126.
For those of you who are wondering more, Chuck and I touched on it a little bit, this rank concept of ranked choice voting. I did an interview. You'll find it on our Montana Talks podcast. Like I say, there's so much ground to cover that we can't sneak it all into this 9 o'clock statewide show. But on our Montana Talks podcast later today, you'll see an interview I did with Sam Rogers from the Foundation for Government Accountability on this very topic. And by the way, he's got a website. What the heck was that website? I had it written down here somewhere. Oh, my goodness. Something about RCV. Oh, shoot. I had it written down, but for Pete's sake, I lost it here. I'll have it for you tomorrow. Or if not, like I say, check out that interview on the Montana Talks podcast. Tomorrow, we better leave the phone lines open for you. And then Friday, live from Columbia Falls.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.